You're listening to an Iconic exclusive, which is an interview that we do with one of the industry designers or participators with 13th Age. Due to the nature of the interview, this podcast may run a little bit longer than our normal episodes, as we're just going to let the person we're interviewing talk and answer our questions, and we're going to have a good time doing it. So just be warned, this one may run longer than what you're normally used to listening to.
This is Iconic, with your hosts JM, Mark, and Nick. Iconic exclusive.
Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th Age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Mark and Nick.
Hey. Hello.
It's a little late where we're at and early where our guest is at. Gareth is back on the show. He's apparently a glutton for punishment and getting up early. Gareth, thanks for coming on and welcome back to the show.
Not at all. Next time, though, we're going to like interview when we're all in the same time zone as opposed to 3 a.m. here.
Well, the next time we're at Gen Con, we'll make sure to just carve out some time there.
Perfect, yeah.
Well, let's just dive into this. You've had actually a couple of new books for Pelgrain coming out since the last time we had you on. Let's kind of start backwards and move forwards. So the Book of Loot, I need to tell you that, and I mentioned this on the show, it was not just a great book for as a GM, but on the way back from Gen Con, we had like a 20-hour drive. And for most of Kansas, I was reading magic item entries out loud to my wife and my buddy in the car. And that's how we passed Kansas, just laughing at the write-ups for the magic item.
Well, there's the back of book blurb right there. It makes Kansas fly by.
That's right. In my review on my blog, I said it made Kansas tolerable, which is pretty much the highest praise I can give any book. So, Book of Loot is out.
Indeed.
Can you give us the elevator pitch for those who may not have picked it up yet?
The Book of Loot is a book of loot. Wait, no, that sounds slightly obvious. It's a book of magic items for 13th Age. They're divided by icons, so if you're building a dungeon that's based around the Diabolist, you can hop in and grab Diabolist-themed boots or whatever you need. There's also a chapter on non-magical treasures and money and coins and gems and other shiny things. And, yeah, it is what it sounds like. It's a book of magic items.
Now, was the decision to divide it up based on icons a way of trying to add a little bit of structure to the icon relationship roles? Because I know a lot of people hand out magic items or boons or something like that for a role. And having it divided like that would be a great way of, you know, looking at what the relationships are and saying, well, okay, well, here's an appropriate item for you to get.
That's how it turned out. The original reason was far more selfish and prosaic, that I was running a campaign that was heavily based on the priestess and I needed a bunch of priestess items. So I wrote those first. And then when I actually wrote those, actually, that's a very good way of organizing the book. Let's stick with that. So we wrote up everything else based on icons as well. And it also makes it a bit different from other magic items books, where you don't just this laundry list of items. Because nothing can be more depressing than writing, like, you know, pretty weak writing boots, for example.
My friend Christopher, who's actually Mark's son, has a major dwarf
fetish.
that was the word I was going for, but his dad's sitting next to me, has a major dwarf fetish. So I gave him the
dwarf enthusiasm, surely.
Yes, dwarf enthusiasm. I want to give him there's a magic item in the book, Mark, where it is it's either like ringlets that you put in your beard, or if you're not a dwarf, it's just a beard that attaches to your face, and it helps grapple people in combat.
You'll love it.
What would you say was the most unique item from the Book of Loot?
Oh, I think one of my first personal favorites is the code book of the Prince of Shadows, or something, whatever, I can't remember the exact name off the top of my head, but it interacts with the fleeing rules. Because in 13th Age, you can flee whenever in a combat and take a campaign loss. This item lets you retroactively go, aha, that campaign loss wasn't really a loss. Our retreat was all part of the Prince of Shadows' plan, and I'm not going to get my cut. I was very fond of that whole concept. I think that it sort of lets the players build on their own defeats is great fun.
Well, that would be a great magical item to have on hand if you are going to go into the Stone Thief.
Yes. The other one that I really liked and our friend Brad enjoyed was the crossbow bolt for the Crusader. It was an epic level item that...
Oh, it's the Dolorous Bolt, isn't it? The one that doesn't heal.
Yes, and how the Crusader may purposefully wound people who are his enemies just to get them to remove the curse and come over to his side. Like, brilliant.
Well, the Crusader's always great fun just because you can be, like, you know, you have to be like ambiguous, like, you know, is he doing the right thing? Is that good? Are we the good guys when we're using that?
Well, you know, I don't really think the Crusader is good per se. He just kind of get things done, like Nietzsche.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Like Nietzsche. Wait a second. I'm not sure Nietzsche got a whole lot done, but...
Well, you obviously read the wrong history books. They're like, you know,
that's right.
Though Nietzsche the Barbarian carves a swathe across Europe.
Well, that actually is a great segue. I don't think you could have planned it better. So one of your other books that just kickstarted recently, you're working on the Dracula dossier, correct?
I am indeed.
You want to chat a little bit about that?
The Dracula dossier isn't for 13th Age, although that's about the only stretch goal we didn't throw into it. It's a campaign for the Knights Black Agents role-playing game. In Knights Black Agents, you're playing burnt-out spies who are hunting vampires. And the sort of hook of the campaign is that Dracula, the novel, isn't actually a novel. It's an after-action report for an attempt by British intelligence to recruit a vampire as an asset in 1894. That attempt goes horribly wrong. The vampire escapes. They hand their notes over to Bram Stoker to write up. He gets too enthusiastic, writes them as a novel. They go, we can't publish this, but if we take out all the, like, you know, interesting bits, all the sources and methods, and publish the novel as this information, if our hideous botched attempt to recruit a vampire ever comes to light, we can just point to the novel and go, look, it's just some crazy Irishman story. It can't have really happened. And... they try again in 1940 to use Dracula as a weapon against the Nazis when they're taking over Romania. That goes horribly wrong. In 1977, there's a mole hunt to find Dracula's Table High Network in England. And then finally, in 2011 or so, they finally get to use Dracula as a weapon in the War on Terror. And that goes horribly, horribly right, which is alarming. And your player characters get hold of a copy of Dracula, the original unredacted one before they took out Bram Stoker stuff, which has been annotated by three generations of MI6 analysts. And you use this as your rules map for an improvised campaign to kill Dracula.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's for that to work as an elevator pitch, you sort of, like, you know, press stop halfway down the elevator and you know, threaten the people.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. I can only imagine that each generation of MI6 agents was like, well, we're way smarter than the last guys who tried this.
Yeah, this time it'll totally
this
work.
This time it'll totally work.
We have their notes this time.
So when you run it, Jam?
Well, it's not out yet.
Indeed, it's been worked on feverishly, not quite as I speak, given it's 3 a.m. and even I'm not that dedicated to it.
But, you know, if there's enough interest in the group, I would definitely run Knights Black Agents. Everybody yes. here is shaking their head yes, so I guess I'm going to be running Knights Black Agents at some point.
Excellent. So, it's a very fun game.
So when will it be released?
We're aiming for Gen Con.
Wonderful.
And we should hopefully make that. Certainly we're on track at the moment, which is nice.
How will it compare in size to, say, like Eternal Lies or Eyes of the Stone Thief?
It'll be smaller. Not that much smaller. Basically, it's going to be two books. You'll have Dracula Unredacted, which is a rewritten version of the original novel with all the cool stuff added back in that Stoker took out, like the volcano that blows up Dracula's castle or the psychic.
What?
Seriously, the original draft of Dracula, which he changed at the last minute, has a mysterious volcano exploding just as they kill Dracula, which also destroys Dracula's castle.
I may have to pick that book just to read it.
And we there's a book out there called Stoker's Notes, which is it's all copies of Stoker's original notes on the novel. And his cast of characters, he cut out like the psychic, he cut out like the Katie, the journalist, he cuts out this police inspector. There's loads of weird stuff about Dracula's allies. And then there's also the Icelandic Dracula, which is a whole other kettle of vampires. Have you heard about the Icelandic Dracula?
No.
No.
The very first translation of Dracula into another language was into Icelandic. It came out in 1906, I think, and comes with a foreword by Bram Stoker himself going, this is like the first translation of my book. I heartily endorse it. Everything in it happened. And the novel is not quite completely different, but radically different. They cut out loads of stuff that happens in London, add in this whole cast of the characters. Dracula's now heads this satanic conspiracy. And no one noticed this up until a few years ago because it's an Icelandic. As in, lots of people translated the foreword by Bram Stoker going, this is, I heartily endorse this. But it was only quite recently that people noticed, hang on, the novel in Icelandic is very, very different to the novel in English. So in the Dracula dossier, we're obviously going, aha, this was all another leak or more disinformation. The other book, in addition to the unredacted Dracula, is the Director's Handbook, which is basically how to use the unredacted Dracula in your campaign. And it's this huge, long set of NPCs, encounters, items, and so forth. And the idea is the players will be given the Dracula novel at the start of the campaign with all its notes. And whatever they pick to investigate, the director can then go and look up in the handbook and go, okay, when they go off and dig into like Van Helsing's genealogy, I've got Van Helsing's descendants here. I've got the secret room in his house in Amsterdam here. I've got his notes here. And basically, wherever the players go to investigate, the GM is always one step ahead of them. And yeah, incredible. Two of those together comprise a giant improvised campaign for Nth Black Agents.
Sounds like you got a great product in your hands.
It's been immense fun to work on, certainly.
I don't play Knights Dark Agents or Knights Black Agents, and I want to get the Dracula dossier. I don't play Trail of Cthulhu yet. I have the Eternalized book because it's just so pretty and such a great read. You actually sold me the Eternalized book at Gen Con. I was like, I need one more for this buy two, get one at half off. And you're like, well, why not Eternalized? Oh, okay. Wait a second. I somehow lost money in this deal.
But you gained a friend.
I did.
You know, given the size of Eternalized, gained furniture as well.
That's right. Well, let's talk about the white whale of your writing for Pelgrane at this point, the Eyes of the Stone Thief. It's done. It's at the printers. We've all looked through it and reviewed it. That is a monster.
It's slightly large.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Oh, the white whale? No, that pun was completely intended. Okay.
That and it's a monster.
It's a monster. Yeah, no.
It's a monster, yeah.
I write my own puns, thank you.
I see that in the outline here, actually.
Eyes of the Stone Thief is what became a giant epic mega campaign for 13th Age, where you're off hunting a living dungeon. And after many delays and the artwork being colored in, it is finally out in PDF. And by the time this podcast hits, it may even be out in print, depending on how long it takes to get back from the printers. But yes, it is done. It killed no one. Well, no one apart from their characters.
Well, just be careful. Mark's still a little raw about the Minotaur level. So,
I'm not as raw as some. I survived it. It's the other 3/5 of the party that
That's
didn't.
That's right.
But, hey,
multiple times.
It was our choice. Yeah. We were pretty stubborn.
It was very helpful to me as a GM, Gareth, because I got to see a ton of different classes played at the table. Because
we died every week.
I'm pretty sure at the end of Make Your Own Luck, I lost 3 out of my 5 players, and then we leveled up to level 4, and it was at least 1 or 2 a week.
Oh, dear.
Sometimes three.
The well with the undead spiders was a particularly rough fight.
You see, the problem is when I'm like running games for myself off the cuff, I tend to be a fairly nice GM. So when I write stuff, I'm always like ready to correct my own perceived weaknesses.
Yeah. Just a question. Did it start out in your mind as a mega dungeon, or did it just kind of grow as you started writing and adding ideas?
Yeah, it's my original pitch to Pellegrin was it'll be 128, maybe 160 pages, which obviously didn't happen. It grew for two reasons. Number one, it just takes longer to do up encounters to the if they're as complex as some of the encounters are in Stone Thief. And then two, just because I kept adding stuff and the outer dungeon stuff, which takes up about a third of the book or so, that just kept growing and growing and growing. It was a combination of me underguessing how long it would take me to write a dungeon encounter and just adding more non-dungeon stuff.
Okay.
But Pellegrin were very forgiving when as the length ballooned and just grew and grew and grew.
I think we all can see why. It was the review for the show will have come out before this episode airs, but we were very positive about it. We all really enjoyed it.
Yes.
Oh, that's very gratifying and reassuring.
Now, I have one question for you, because my favorite part of the book was actually strictly color. Is the only way I can say it. I'm flipping, reading through the book, and I get to the pit of undigested ages, and I'm like reading, and then it's like somebody took six pages from Temple of Elemental Evil and put it in there. I mean, like the stat blocks look like a first edition, stat block for like a kobold or a goblin or something. How did that come about?
I'm pretty sure I would need to go through old emails to check, but I'm pretty sure that was Simon Rogers' idea. Simon, the owner and publisher of Pellegrin, because he's been playing, I think it's Second Ed with his group for the last, how long has Second Ed been out? A very long time. Although he recently converted them over to 13th Age finally, which I think took some doing. And a custom assassin's class. But I'm pretty sure it was his idea to do a section that was basically a homage to old school D&D adventuring, and Chris Hutt, the layout person, went above and beyond to get the look of it just right, because literally that six-page section took almost as much layout effort as the rest of the book.
I'm like, did my file get corrupted? Did I open something else when I wasn't paying attention on my tablet? No, this is 13th Age stat.
Yeah, we have had a few reports of people going, excuse me, there's a misprint in my book. You've clearly accidentally put a signature in from some other product.
Well, now that it's done, I know when we chatted with you earlier, you were on the kind of the middle, just kind of approaching the middle of Eyes of the Stone Thief. What are your thoughts on it? What's your favorite part? What's the part that if you could, you'd go back and tweak a little bit?
Oh, I don't know. See, I haven't seen the actual printed book yet. And the printed book will be really the motor of revelation where I go, damnation, I should have done that differently. It needs to get sort of like the maximum peak of guilt where there's actually a physical book in my hands. I don't know yet what I'm going to really love or hate when I actually see the finished book, because there's a huge psychological difference between the Word doc and the PDF and the actual printed book. He said in a complete non-answery way.
That's fair.
Well, how about in hindsight, as it was going through the editing process, what was the biggest part of it that got changed?
Actually, the Minotaur fight, seeing as got mentioned earlier, went through a lot of revisions, because in my original draft, it was actually at the start of that dungeon level, not the end. And Rob Hines basically went, you don't want to kill the players that early. Let them survive a little longer. So that got shuffled around a lot until Rob was happy that it wasn't quite so murderous as it turned out. It's still very murderous, but it's not like TPK every time the party walks into the dungeon. I'm not quite sure what I was thinking with the TPK every time the party walks into the dungeon approach, other than taking out some long buried issues on a certain D&D GM.
Was that one that was too hard or too easy?
That one's really on the edge of too hard. It's supposed to be a horrible, hideous, we're not in Kansas anymore, so to speak.
Oh, no, encounter. I meant the GM that you were referring to.
No, he had a bunch of manuals on like how the SAS set up camps and like, you know, run security patrols, and he applied them to his orcs.
Oh, so my goodness. Like my innocent Tucker's
halfling ranger tries to sneak into the orc camp, and I'm like, you're surprised from six different angles at once, and
a little bit too much prep.
I'm pretty sure I was crucified then.
Wow, that.
Yeah, it was a fun campaign in a sort of a, oh God, oh God, oh God, oh God, please let me roll well, please let me roll well. No.
Well, that's how you take care of halflings in your game.
I feel it was like, you know, punishment undeserved by any poor innocent halfling.
Now, I noticed in the final release, in the library section, you in the playtest document, you suggested getting like Russian poetry for people to read out loud if you rolled a critical hit on that power. I see that was taken out. Was 18th century Russian poetry just too dense for use at the table?
I'm not sure why that was taken out. Actually, I suspect just a bit basically because someone would take it literally and go, I have just spent bought this giant campaign, and I've got to go to buy another book of Russian poetry as well to go with it.
I'm sorry, the rules state here on this page exactly. That I'm supposed to use Russian poetry.
And if your bookstore is out, the Icelandic version of Dracula. <That's right. laughs>
Nice. Magdaburkana, the powers of darkness.
Oh. So,
but you can just use any poetry that comes to hand, because I'm sure everyone has some large book of dense poetry lying around their house.
No, can't say that I do.
Not poetry, but yeah, I have a few books.
I've got some big dense books, but no poetry.
Yeah. I'm tracking. I'll pull out like Inferno or Paradise Lost and be like, here, read some Milton. Come back.
Actually, what you really want to put out is the Welsh. I'm going to pronounce this wrong. Mabillonian, which is the Welsh Arthurian cycle, which if you're ever stuck for one unique things, it's full of them. Because it's all full of like, you know, Sir XXX, who is like, you know, the greatest hero in the world, and Sir XXX, whose like one leg is as long as like, you know, the sunset, and his other leg is very, very short. It's full of absolutely great. It's basically, if you had a random Arthurian knight encounter table, it's great for it.
Wow. So, what do you hope people reading Eyes take away from the adventure?
Whatever they want, to be honest, which is a really glib way of responding, but it's such a huge and deliberately modular book that even if you don't run the whole thing, there should be something useful in there for any campaign. So the idea that basically it's not a book of holy writ that you must run through from page one to page 3XX, that you can like, you know, dip in and out, grab what you want, grab what suits your group, and basically approach it as a toolbox of horrible ways to kill your players, as opposed to a mandated instructions on how to kill your players.
Yeah, I think I owe Mark money because I was pretty sure the response was going to be stacks of dead characters. But
well, see, I want to avoid the crushing guilt of actually being the one responsible for killing the characters. So if I push that guilt and that responsibility onto the GMs by going, take what you want, use it as you will.
That's right.
It's then their fault if their characters horribly die and won't be haunted by their ghosts.
Believe me, Jam is quite guilt-free.
Oh, I'm talking.
As he always says, hey, you can always run away. But this is the only way through. Well, I guess you'll have to come back later and let the Minotaur heal before you go.
About the only thing that my players get from me when their characters die is the death salute. I'll stand up, give them the salute, and then go back to running the game. So
his arm got tired during the playtest.
As he points out, you can always run away, that's which right. is a wonderful mechanic for horribly cruel GMs.
I love that mechanic, and I've never seen it put into play, but I'm like, listen, I'm just going to keep ramping up the difficulty till I see one group run away. One of you is going to have to take the bullet for the rest of the people I run for. Well,
One of the things we talked about last week in our review of Eyes of the Stone Thief was how to go beyond Eyes, because it's a 4th to 8th level adventure, and we were trying to figure out, you know, if you just conquered this big bad monster, what's in store for the next couple of levels for your characters? Do you have any advice or tips on maybe where you can go from there?
It depends on how the campaign ended. If you just like managed to kill the dungeon, then you've probably messed up the plans of one or more enemy icons. Like if the Orc Lord, for example, was trying to seize control of the dungeon and you kill it, then he may go, you are obviously the, like, you know, defenders of the Empire, the linchpins of their defense. I must eliminate you. So you immediately set up a sort of, like, you know, grudge match for level 8, depending on how you take out the dungeon. I also quite like the idea of the dungeon basically trashing some large key part of the Empire in its death throes. So if you kill the dungeon, but it lands on Horizon just as it's dying,
that would be good.
And they like you look up and go,
it's your fault Archmage, now. Yes,
exactly. The Archmage was under there.
Man,
yes. And of course then you've got, like, you know, go find the new Archmage. You've got like the Golden Child in 13th Age.
But again, these are just random ideas that should...
Exactly.
If you use them in your game, all of the blood is on your hands. We'll have to put a disclaimer in the show notes, come up with some sort of... Gareth is not responsible for any party death from the Eyes of the Stone Thief or listening to Iconic.
Indeed. Save you from being haunted by these little rustling ghosts of player characters.
Oh, now we could have a... we could do a Dickensian... adventure where there's a game designer haunted by all of the ghosts. Or you haven't gotten that far, like Karsa in Malazan.
Yeah.
Well, Gareth, what's next on your plate for books? I know we talked about the Dracula dossier. Yeah. Do you have anything 13th Age?
Well, Dracula dossier is the main priority. However, I'm now going to put that down for a day or two to do the 13th Age adventure for the upcoming Free RPG Day, which is, when is that again?
June? Beginning of June?
June. I think so, yeah, around then. I'll get the exact date in a sec. But yeah, we're going to be doing another like Make Your Own Luck adventure for that. After that, my next 13th Age book that I've got an outline in for is going to be a book on demonology, with basically a bunch of hellholes, loads of new demons, demons and the icons, demon items, and if I can get it past Rob, a demonology class vaguely based off the necromancer in 13th True Ways, but with much more of a diabolical streak to it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Do you think you're going to tie the Free RPG Day adventure into that book like you did with Eyes?
No, the Free RPG Day adventure would probably be another tie-in to Eyes of the Stone Thief, given it's our current sort of banner release for 13th Age until the next book comes out.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well,
That said, I will have demons on the brain at that point, so I would be surprised if something sneaks in.
Well, you should totally go listen to the episode that we did on demons.
Yes, might give you an idea.
I will. I've listened to it already. I must go back and listen to it again before I actually start writing the book.
The next time you're stateside, if you want to let us know, we'll try and get an interview in that is not at 3 a.m.
Well, the next one stateside will be Gen Con, I'd say.
Okay. Well, we should try and get something in there. We have a lot of requests for power and class creation episodes, so we'd love to pick your brain on that.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Joel, any other thoughts or questions?
I just want to say thank you for doing it. Such a great job on Eyes. I was really impressed by it.
Yeah.
I think for me, it kind of raised the bar a little bit on the quality of the 13th Age official products. You guys all did a really good job on it.
Thank you very much. I'm actually very glad it did turn out, because it did go beyond its original brief quite a bit. So it was very gratifying that it did all come together in the end and wasn't a hideous, like, you know, boondoggle.
Well, we are pleased to announce our second contest for the Iconic podcast. We're calling it Get Out and Run 13th Age.
How original.
How original. after doing our organized play episode, Mark, Nick, and I were chatting, and we wanted to do something to get organized play up and running at your local game store, and what better way to do that than with our listeners. Nick, why don't you tell us about the contest?
All right. What we are wanting you to do is to go to your friendly local gaming store and run one of the organized play adventures, and then tell us about it. We will need to know your name, the name of your gaming store, when you ran it, what adventure, and what parts of that adventure, and then a maximum of 300-word write-up of what happened. And it would be great also if we could get a picture of your group so we can see what your table looks like.
We'll post all of the entries on the website. Winners will be determined randomly, but each session that you run will count as a separate entry. I mean, you'll have to put a separate entry together, but you can enter multiple times, but you can only win once. And what kind of contest would it be without prizes? Mark, tell us about our prizes.
Okay, we were graciously allowed to offer the first place winner $20 used on Pelgrane's Press website. Second gets 15, and third gets 10. Remember, you can only win once, but the more you enter, the greater chance to win that first prize.
That's right. So when you're ready to submit your entry, jump over to iconicpodcast.com. There will be a post that has a link to a Google form that will just allow you to fill out all of that and submit it. In fact, that is the official way to submit entries for this contest. All other ways will be looked at and then promptly discarded. This contest will run between now and March 31st. We're giving you just over 2 full months to get into your game store, get a group going. Winners will be announced by April 6th. Get out there and game. Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions or comments, you can contact us at whitedragon@iconicpodcast.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.